We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
He was studying 1 Corinthians 13, which happens to be one of my favorite passages. Love never fails, it tells us. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things.
The mindset of the entire anti-university or multiversity is trying to drive home the point that there is no meaning in life. You are your own God. Do what you will do for your own sake. Pay us $40,000 a year to do it here.
The story of the changing of water to wine already has within it important references to Jesus' death.
Hello. I want to say that foreigners with English as a second language also love issues, etc. Bye.
Martyrs are often remembered by the church. That's not unusual. What is unusual is for those martyrs to be women. That is somewhat unusual. And then for these women to be mothers and then also converts to Christianity. Why did the Roman government in the first, second, third centuries of Christianity, why did they care whether somebody converted to Christianity? Why did they persecute them, even to the point of death, if they did? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc., coming to you from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be remembering third century martyrs Perpetua and Felicitas. The church remembers them on the 7th of March. Dr. Joel Olowski of Concordia Seminary in St. Louis will be our guest. A little bit later, Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer joins us for our regular weekly series, Christ in the Old Testament. Isaiah 12 is a song of praise. Then, Casey Maddox, Senior Counsel for Alliance Defending Freedom, will be our guest. We're going to talk about the oral arguments heard yesterday by the Supreme Court on a legal challenge to a Texas abortion law. It's a big decision. It's also one of the first to come, probably within a decade, to the Supreme Court, an abortion law. Brian Brown will be our guest after that, President of the National Organization for Marriage, the GOP presidential candidate Donald Trump, and his views on homosexual marriage and the redefinition of marriage will be the topic. And then we'll round everything off on this Thursday afternoon, talking with Pastor Chris Roseborough. This week in Pop American Christianity, there has been a lawsuit filed against former Mars Hill pastor Mark Driscoll, a RICO lawsuit that has to do with racketeering, how money at the church was used when he was in charge there. Chris Roseborough, Fighting for the Faith, will be our guest. Joining us to talk about third century martyrs Perpetua and Felicitas, Dr. Joel Olowski, Associate Professor of Historical Theology and Director of the Center for the Study of Early Christian Texts at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, formerly served as the Operations Manager for the Ancient Christian Commentary on Scripture series. Joel, welcome back to Issues Etc.
It's good to be back with you again.
But much of the story about these two martyrs is that they were converts, and I guess that's the context of this story. Why would the big, bad Roman Empire be worried about people like these two women, Perpetua and Felicitas, converting to Christianity?
Well, these emperors were always concerned about having, you know, the loyalty of their subjects, shall we say. And one of the things that Christianity posed to the empire, I mean, it was a challenge in some ways, because I think I've mentioned this before, that, one of the ways to rally the people around the emperor was not only worship of the emperor, but worship of the Roman gods. And so if somebody wasn't doing that, they saw it in many ways as a competition with the emperor and the empire. So, he actually making this edict, I suppose, in some ways was trying to consolidate his power a bit and make sure his subjects were loyal. I mean, that's the best guess. You know, as far as the persecution itself, I think, as I mentioned before, this was probably something more local, but they would have used the emperor's edict probably as a way to prosecute these Christians.
So talk about Christianity, kind of where it's at the very turn into its third century, the very beginning of its third century.
Well, we learn from somebody like Tertullian, for instance, that Christianity had it had affected pretty much all levels of society. So you have people in the lower classes, like the slaves, for instance, who were had become Christians, and it was very, very popular among the slaves because they, you know, were treated on a much higher level. But you also had Christianity even as high up as into the household of the emperor. So, and you've got the middle class as well. So Christianity by this time is actually growing, despite its not legal status. It's starting to spread throughout the empire that way.
Okay, tell us the story of Perpetua and Felicitas.
Yeah, it's a fascinating story. And of course, it's one of those that, after the Skeleton Martyrs, it's one of the earliest stories we have about this martyrdom. And it was, parts of it are told by a narrator, but then you also have parts of it told in the first person. And so, the two key figures, you've got Vibia Perpetua and then Felicitas. Of course, Perpetua was only 22 years old. She had just had a baby that she was, nursing still. She would have been married, a noblewoman, so she was in the upper levels of society. But then you also have this slave whose name is Felicitas. You know, and even those names are rather fascinating. Perpetua meaning, she was going to endure. You get that kind of idea. And Felicitas meaning she was blessed or happy. I mean, I think they're telling something in those very names. Now, these, of course, were historical people. We know this is a historical account. They were arrested along with some others, some men, Revocatus, Saturninus, and Secundulus. Revocatus, of course, also was a slave. Saturninus and Secundulus were freemen. So that's why I say you've got this, spectrum of Christians in different levels of society. So they're arrested. They do the standard kind of interrogation and seeing if they will give away their faith, betray their faith. And what's kind of even very poignant in this case is you've got Perpetua's own father kind of begging her to not go through with it, to deny her faith. And she's like, how can I deny what I am, which is a Christian? And her identity as a Christian, she just held forth for her father. But, that had to be difficult for her, a daughter, to disobey her father like that. But not only that, you've got, she's got a young child that she's going to take care of. And Felicitas is actually pregnant during the time that she's arrested. So you've got these two mothers, one an expectant mother, facing this persecution, facing basically going to the Colosseum there in Carthage, the local stadium, where they would be then presented to this crazy crowd of people who wanted to see them killed. So, it's very much a personal story of families involved and taking care, I often wonder if people would be willing, when you have children like that, would you still be willing to give your life? But both of these women were willing to do that. And in fact, Felicitas actually has her child while she's in prison. So she was afraid that she wouldn't be allowed to be martyred because the Roman government had a law that you couldn't martyr a woman who was pregnant, or you couldn't kill a woman who was pregnant. So she actually prayed that she'd be able to deliver her child, which she was able to do. So imagine this scene, they're taken after the trial and they're all convicted, they all confess their faith, and there they are out in the stadium, and you've got the men actually, they were all condemned ad bestias, which means, condemned to die by the hand of the beasts. The different, like, for the men, I think it was like leopards, wild boar, bear, these kinds of animals would come out and they would maul the Christians to death. For the women, though, they picked something a little different, kind of ironic. They actually picked a cow, a female, to attack them. And, it talks about kind of the battle that they face, and Perpetua is actually gored by this cow. And then she wants to make sure, though, that she's not immodest in her martyrdom even, so she makes sure her hair is everything okay. But also, I know they were trying to actually dress her in the priestess's robes of the Roman deities, and she chose not to do that. And so they stripped them naked and put a net over them, so the animals could attack them. It was really a gross, terrible way to die. But the beasts actually didn't kill them. They actually had to bring in a soldier who was kind of a novice, I think the text says, and he stabbed her but didn't quite do the job. So she actually takes the sword, puts it there for him, and guides it into her to kill her. You know, and I mean, it's just a gruesome thing. And the crowd, I think, actually had to realize some of it, I think, was affected by it as well. But, you know, they looked towards, again, that heavenly vision. And, in fact, Perpetua had dreams even while she was in prison, where she was allowed to see some different visions of heaven and also some battles that she would undergo. And she was willing to go through all of that and be faithful to her Lord, even unto the point of death. And she made sure her children were taken care of, but, you know, they would be without a mother. So it was it's really quite a story.
Can you explain, because you encounter this in your studies, you encounter these martyrdom stories again and again, and they may be embellished or romanticized a bit, but they're reflecting kind of a constant principle, and that is a kind of bravery, fearlessness in the face of death. And then in some cases, like with Felicitas and Perpetua, even a desire for martyrdom. I mean, it goes far beyond this notion of I'm willing to die, but in some ways, I don't want to put too fine a point on it, Joel, but a desire to undergo martyrdom. Can you explain
Well,
that?
Yeah, in some ways that's the case. And they even treated martyrdom sometimes as like a second baptism, if you will, because they believed that they were imitating the life of their Lord and of the apostles, and that this was, you know, greater love can no one have than this, that he laid down his life for a friend. Well, they felt they were laying down their lives for Christ. And so they really had this view that they were imminently going to be meeting their Lord, and this was the highest gift they could give. So, I mean, it's one of those things. In seeking out the martyrdom, you have some bishops later on who actually kind of caution against this a bit, that you don't seek it out, but if you're presented with martyrdom, you know, you are to be faithful, but you're not to seek it out, because they saw this kind of as not always a salutary thing that was going on. And it was one of these things, though, that, as I say, these martyrs had this view of eternity that was almost just imminent right there before them. And they would seek it out to be right there in the presence of their Lord.
What did the Romans make of this? Because, of course, these are scattered accounts. But certainly there must be some reflection on the part of the Romans on the way that Christians died. What did they make of it?
Well, I think it had to affect them, and we know that even some of those who were put in charge of guarding them would end up converting because of this as well, because of the witness that they saw. But then you get some emperors like Decius later on who just, despite the evidence, he even makes the persecution on a global scale, because he just sees this as a challenge, you know, that instead of Caesar is Lord, you've got these martyrs saying Jesus is Lord. That ends up being, you know, a confrontation that the emperors are going to lose, but they nonetheless fight against it. And in some of these martyrdom accounts, it's almost even framed as a battle, frankly, right with Satan. And they see the emperor as his henchman, so to speak. It's one of these things that it's rather ironic that through the martyrdoms, actually, the Christianity grows even more, because people see how much Christians are willing to suffer, so much so that Tertullian says that the blood of the martyrs is seed, you know, and of course he meant seed for the growth of the church, as that blood that was shed then ends up bringing even more people, because they're just amazed at, you know, the commitment that these people would have.
The picture there, you know, for the martyrs, you talked about their kind of vision of eternity or of the kingdom yet to be fulfilled, and their entrance into it. They often describe their martyrdom that way, about, you know, basically entering into the resurrection almost through their martyrdom. But on the one side, you have the Romans, whose motives are kind of quasi-political and religious. And on the other side, the martyrs, who see this as a spiritual thing. They don't care anything for Roman politics at all, or for Roman. They see this as a spiritual undertaking.
Well, they, you know, they see their citizenship, right? Their citizenship is in heaven. And, you know, they've got the example of Stephen there when, you know, he's being martyred by the Jews there in Acts. And he's looking up to heaven and he sees the vision right there of the Lord, you know. So it's very much, where is our citizenship? Where, you know, they kind of challenge us, I guess, a little bit with that, even as the Apostle Paul does, is to look to where we see our ultimate citizenship lying. And, of course, ultimately, we do see that heavenly vision, and we know that that's a much more enduring vision as well. So it's definitely a very different perspective in some ways, but it's one that I think we would be well, you know, do well to pay attention to.
So this mindfulness of the early Christians whose lives were so often cut short, or at the very least made hellish, you know, just because of a conversion to Christianity, you're saying here, they are not just seeing an eternal perspective. They really are both looking back to the sufferings of Christ and seeing its fulfillment in the promised resurrection.
No, that's exactly right. And they see their lives as a gift from God, but a gift that, in some sense, they are offering to him, you know, in service and in the ultimate sacrifice of death itself, but for the name of Christ, you know. And this is something they saw the scriptures of the New Testament foretelling, but they also saw it, of course, in the prophets of the Old Testament. So it's where your heart is, there your treasure will be also. And, you know, so often they get the accusers and the ones who are interviewing them are trying to get them to deny what they see as their identity. You know, what do you identify as? And, you know, Tertullian, for instance, said he doesn't identify as a Roman or even as an African. First, he identifies as a Christian. And that's the kind of identity you see with these martyrs, that they first identify themselves as Christian, and everything else is secondary.
So finally, then, with about 30 seconds or so, how does the church best remember Perpetua and Felicitas?
I think they look at two courageous women, it's hard to believe, but who were even willing to put Christ before their children, which, of course, Christ says, you know, whoever doesn't hate father, mother, children, wife more than me is not worthy of me. To see two women who were committed to their Lord, but who also serve as examples to us of where our real treasure is. That's what I would say.
Dr. Joel Olowski is Associate Professor of Historical Theology and Director of the Center for the Study of Early Christian Texts at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. He formerly served as the Operations Manager for the Ancient Christian Commentary on Scripture series. Joel, thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
When we come back, we'll be in our series, Christ in the Old Testament. Today we'll be in Isaiah chapter 12. Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will be our guest. After that, Casey Maddox will join us. We'll talk about those oral arguments heard yesterday by the Supreme Court in a legal challenge to a Texas abortion law.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Do you have a student finishing up eighth grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Historic, authentic Christian radio. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
St. Jacobi Lutheran Church in Shawnee, Wisconsin has a special guest each and every week. It isn't you, but it is Jesus Christ. He is a guest, and he is also the one who comes to serve you with his preached word and his broken body and shed blood. You are invited to be served by Jesus on Saturday evening at 6:30 and Sunday morning at 9 a.m. Visit www.stjakobi.org for more information.
Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois, engages young adults in a Christ-centered environment, delivering academic excellence and spiritual growth to develop Christian leaders for tomorrow. We provide a Christ-focused alternative to public high schools. Many of our students receive tuition assistance. To help us provide tuition assistance to more students, go to melhs.org and click on the giving page, or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.